Off the Ball.
Home of Wednesday night rugby with Woody and Jerry.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, delighted to get to this next piece. Jamie Cudmore's story is one we've mentioned on the show previously. He obviously played in World Cups for Canada and had a big career in France over the last decade or so, with Clermont in particular. Jamie, you're very welcome. Let's dive right into this story involving Clermont, and we'll jump in at the 2015 European Cup semi-final, which is obviously a huge day for you and for the club. And this story starts with a head collision.
Yeah, it was 2015 semi-final, as you said, in Saint-Étienne. Huge day for the club. Big game against Saracens, and one of those accidents in the play when you're flying into ruck, clear a guy out, and two guys clash heads, which is obviously happens numbers of times in the games. And I was pretty well split open. Ended up leaving the field. And it was during that time that the doc saw that I wasn't doing very well.
Mm. It was a clash of heads with Vunipola, I think. Watched the incidents. It's just one of those terrible moments where two players are rushing into a breakdown and heads collide. And nobody feels good about it. You get into the dressing room for your assessment, Jamie. What happens during the assessment?
Yeah, well, I was taken off originally for blood as we clashed heads.
Right.
We both got opened up pretty well. I was taken off for blood, and during that time, the doc saw that I was pretty dazed. So after the stitches were put in, I was put through an HIA, and I was told that I didn't pass and that my day was done.
Hmm.
That's when the real problems started. As I was very, very upset. I wanted to continue to play. Like every rugby player wants to get back out there and do his best for the team.
So even though you're dazed, you're saying, "Doc, let me back on. I'm good to go."
Yeah, I think it's very common with most rugby players. You play through a lot of pain, whether it be shoulder, knee, bruising, a number of different things, and even head injuries as well. Because I think for me at the time, I definitely didn't know the danger. And as well, you don't really think about it. You're thinking about getting out there and helping your teammates and helping trying to win the game. But he was very good. Said, "No, your day's done."
Okay.
And I sat down and started taking off my boots. I was obviously very frustrated, very upset, because I wanted to get out there and be a part of this huge game.
Yeah.
He said that was it. So I was kind of resigned to the fact that my day was done. I started taking my boots off, and it was it was kind of only had really got one boot off, and he came running back in, and he said, "Seb Vahamina, my second row partner, was struggling, and could I go back on?" And I said, "Yeah, of course, I'm ready to go." Not really thinking of the danger that I was putting myself in, and I raced out there and finished the game.
Right at that point, so we'll get on to the fallout and the final. But at that point, Jamie, what was your concussion profile like? Because I find it interesting, you're saying that you didn't really know the dangers of, say, second impact syndrome, and you were more than happy to get back out there. Had you had many concussions in your career at that point?
No, not too many.
Right.
No, I've had it's hard to really say, because in terms of documented concussions, I'd only had one, I think it was in the 2008-2009 season.
Yeah.
Where I was actually stood down, and I was at training. I was at really foggy, kind of a bit of fog in the head, and difficulty raising my heart rate, and those type of symptoms.
Hmm.
But before then, I'd had a big one, ski racing crash when I was about 15, 16 years old, and a few just did a lot of boxing, a lot of wrestling stuff as a youngster. So there were maybe a few there.
Right.
But in terms of the kind of the research and data that is out there around concussions, I hadn't really looked much into it, and I definitely hadn't been enlightened by anybody in the team in terms of doctors and physios or anything like that.
Right, fair enough. And a last point on that semi-final against Saracens: you get the bang, you come off, you fail the HIA, you're taking off your boots, you're thrown back out there. I presume you still feel a touch dazed. How do you get on in the rest of that game against Saracens?
I don't remember too much. Obviously, what I do remember is what I've seen on the video. I think I get through the game not too bad. I managed to put in a few sticks and a few decisive passes and parts of plays in the second half.
Right.
But in terms of remembering much of it, you know, that's it's only what I've seen on the video that I really do remember.
Mm. So you win the game, you win the European semi-final. There's a final against Toulon, which I presume you, like every rugby player, is desperate to play in. What's the fallout? What, you're brought to neurosurgeons, for instance.
Yep. So the following Monday, I come into training. Obviously, after the game, the doc sees that I'm struggling. I was stood down for the week. I had a graduated return to play protocol.
Yeah.
So instead of doing a 1 day bike, next day a bit more, get the heart rate going. I had a day in between each step.
Mm-hmm.
So I do Monday, Tuesday off, Wednesday, the second stage. And at the same time, I was being monitored by our local neurosurgeon.
Right.
So I did a baseline test with him, which obviously was not very good because I had been properly concussed on the Saturday.
So when you say you're struggling, Jamie, what does that actually mean? Is it memory? Is it fogginess? Is it headaches? What, you know, those first few days?
For me, in terms of symptoms, I had definitely headaches, inability to sleep, even though feeling very tired, very groggy. You know, that kind of fog, I had in my head. With the neuro, he obviously saw that there was things were not doing too well.
Yeah,
and that's when we started going through all the testing, and I really had some trouble with a lot of that.
Right. Does that improve over the 2 weeks in the build-up to the Toulon game? Because you do play in the final against Toulon. At what point did you realize you were going to be allowed play?
At the end of that first week. At the end of that first week, things started to really improve.
Okay.
I did another baseline test, which was a vast improvement at the end of the week.
Right.
On the Sunday to make sure that I was good to go for that following week, starting Monday. He deemed I was fit to play, and I was allowed to get back on the field. I thought I was okay.
Mm.
He seemed to think I was okay, but I think in retrospect, it was definitely me wanting to play more than actually realizing that I was actually fit to play.
Mm. So the final comes along against Toulon. I've looked at the incident. You make a tackle in the game, your first real, tackle, your first big moment in the game against Chris Massui. And it's not a head-on-head collision. It's a textbook run-of-the-mill tackle, which to an observer just looks very normal. Your shoulder goes into him. It's not a massive hit by any means. And
no.
Yet your brain effectively reacts badly to this very normal tackle.
Yeah, no, it was just a classic kind of hit.
Yeah.
Guy coming in on a short line. And I actually got two guys at once. I think the guy got Chucky and Chris at the same time. But like you said, it was just a classic shoulder contact. But that was enough for my head to get sparked out again. And I ended up going off again for HIA.
Right. Talk to us about the dressing room, the HIA then.
So then I went off and was cleared to the HIA. I passed that. The doctor deemed I was fit to continue to play. And this, mind you, is the second doctor. ASM last year used two doctors.
Right.
They kind of switched off as they both had young families. They couldn't do every weekend, every game.
Mm.
So there's a new doctor, and he deemed me fit to play. I was allowed to go back out on the field.
Mm.
And then I received another clash of heads in the second half with Vaughn Smith, where I was cut and went off for blood.
Mm.
And I was stitched up. And during the stitching of my head, I started to become very nauseous and started vomiting in the change room.
Mm. So, anyone who's not familiar with your story at this point, we get to here and they're all assuming that's it. Your day is done. This is a red flag, given what's happened in the semi-final against Saracens, given the fact you've come off already just from a routine tackle and been sparked out, and now you're vomiting in the dressing room. But you're sent back out again, which is just frightening. Did they do another HIA on you when you're vomiting in the dressing room?
No. The doctor deemed that due to stress and due to the the kind of excitement of the event, he deemed that was the reason I was puking. I've never thrown up in my life before a game or during a game, unless obviously I've been actually sick. So for him to let me back on the field was a huge error in my opinion. That's one of the reasons we're running our foundation to try and stop these type of things happening again.
Yeah. How do you go when you get back on the field?
I finished the game. Right. It was obviously very very difficult because I was pretty far gone by that time. I was just kind of out there surviving. It was hard to say whether I played well or not. Yeah. I just kind of got through. It was only really the last 10 minutes, but it was a start of a pretty tough time, a tough three, four months for me.
Your wife is in the crowd watching, utterly horrified.
My wife, my father as well. My father's actually a physician, so he was under the impression that I'd be properly cared for by the medical staff. Being he's a doctor with a Hippocratic oath and everything, he would expect them to give me proper care. But that was clear that it clearly wasn't the case when I came out the second time. He was beside himself, much like my wife.
Mm. The whole month of June, you're essentially on your couch.
Yeah, the whole month of June was pretty dark time. For the first couple of weeks, I probably slept about 2-3 days. I had an enormous need to sleep. I felt like I wanted to sleep, but I just couldn't. Mm. My head was just kind of ringing and buzzing, and obviously felt very lethargic, very kind of very angry at my kids and the wife about any stupid little thing that would happen, which is totally unlike me. I'm normally very easygoing guy. Mm. It was tough. Luckily, I did manage to get fit after about 3.5 months, and I was able to be cleared to play in the World Cup of Canada.
Yeah. When did you decide to take legal action?
We haven't actually taken legal action.
Right. Okay.
That's been
widely reported.
It has been reported, but it's wrong to say that we're actually taking legal action. It's definitely a possibility in the future.
Right.
We want to work together. We want to work with Clermont. We want to work with clubs, with the SFR, the LNR, all the different structures here in France, because the main thing that's missing here is education. Mm. People either don't know the risks and continue to play, much like myself.
Yeah, which people listening will find staggering that, you're an experienced professional in 2015. There's been so much talk about concussion, but it actually demonstrates that you can be insulated from the education.
Definitely. Seeing a lot of the progressive work done in the British Isles, definitely North America around hockey and the rugby and the NFL has followed suit.
Yeah.
That's great to see. But unfortunately, we're years behind here in France.
Jamie, did you, and our guest here is Jamie Cudmore, did you sit down with Clermont, later in that year or any time since and look for an explanation, find out, doctors, are you guys under pressure from the team? Is this just a bizarre kind of inexplicable ignorance? Like, what happened here? Have you sat down and talked to the people involved?
Yes, I have. So after the World Cup, I was cleared by neurosurgeons in France and also in Canada because I wanted to make sure I had an unbiased second opinion. And only then did I decide to go back and play with Canada so that I was to make sure that I was one, fit to play, most importantly, and fit to, just continue on. At the return of my sent to the World Cup with Canada, I was still very, very upset about what had happened in the end of May, the previous season. I asked for for answers from the two doctors. They changed their stories during that time, saying that I did pass the HIA in the game in San Etienne against Saracens. And then again, he reiterated in the final, the other doctor, that he thought that it was just the overexcitement of the final and the event that I was vomiting in the change room. So I thought this was absolutely, you know, unacceptable.
Yes.
I drafted a letter with my lawyer stating the facts of what had happened during those 2 weeks and saying that, you know, I'm obviously not happy with my treatment, and one, that we don't want this to happen again. We want to promise us that, you know, friends of mine that play on the team and other young players coming up wouldn't undergo the same treatment, and for them to adhere to the World Rugby HIA rules, that when a player is suspected of a concussion, that they're taken off the field and they don't return to play.
Yeah. And what was the response of Claremont?
First response was, how dare you send this letter to us? It's like trahir le club in French. The French word is, it's like you're...
Betraying
the club, exactly. They said, how dare you send this letter to us? It's like you're ambushing us.
Wow.
And this is me by myself with the general manager, the assistant manager, the coach, and the two doctors in a room.
Yeah.
And basically everyone took a turn tearing a strip off me. The two doctors said that I was lying. The coach said, the coach and the general manager reiterated that I'm betraying the club by attacking them like this. And I said, listen, guys, I'm not attacking anybody. What I'm doing here is I'm putting a line in the sand saying, this is what happened. I'm not happy with it. And I just want you guys to assure me that it's not going to happen again. And that all I got was anger, disbelief, that I would even have the gall to bring something like that up, and especially in the form of a letter.
Wow. I'm speechless.
Yeah, so was I. You know, my wife and I were... we're beside ourselves with that treatment, especially after battling for that club for 11 years.
Yeah.
And for me to be treated like that and basically kicked out the back door afterwards, you know, I didn't expect anything. You know, I had a great last month at the club. I've got some great friends there, and I wish all the best. But it's very disappointing to finish 11 years in a club, and it kind of goes sour like it did,
to say the least. Yeah. How are you now, and are you worried about the future?
In the future, you know, I think maybe there may be some problems. There may not be.
It's hard to know.
It's too hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, with all the neurosurgeons I've talked to, you know, there's no clear cut answer to guys who've had 10 concussions or 5 concussions or a few like myself or one. You know, as I've with Dr. Sherman, who's on our BOD for our safety network, he said I've stopped players playing after one concussion. I've stopped players playing after 10 concussions. It's really a case by case basis.
Nice.
For me, of all the tests I've done with many different neurosurgeons in France, in Switzerland, in Canada, for me, I've been cleared by all of them.
Right.
And definitely the key for me now is, if I do suffer another concussion, that the medical staff here where I am in Oyonnax, that they've assured me that I'll be protected and I'll be taken out of the field.
Mm. And I presume you're probably at a point where you might take yourself out of the field too, because, you know, Claremont at their very worst might even throw this back at you and say, well, where was your own personal responsibility and you should have, you know, refused to come back on.
Yeah, sure. Personal responsibility, that's pretty tough to do as a rugby player, because you know, when you're out there, you want to be out there and help the team as best you can. For you to think about your personal responsibility when you're in concussed state is very difficult.
Yeah,
that's where the doctor has to step in and protect the player. You know, it's fine for me to say, you know, my head's not so good, and sure, if that happens, then I'll definitely do that now that I know the dangers. But definitely in the past, it needs to come down to the coaches and the doctors to really put their foot down.
I know so you've set up a foundation and you want to make as many people aware of this as possible, which is great. It just by quirk, by coincidence, we had Dr. Barry O'Driscoll on the show last week. He's Brian O'Driscoll's uncle, but he was also the medical advisor with the IRB, as it was then, and World Rugby Now. His view on the HIA, he says, and I'm using his words, that it's an experiment and there's no clinical basis for it. And it's interesting that you, you know, you're passing these HIAs when it doesn't really sound to me like you should be.
No, no, you're exactly right. And, you know, if you look at the actual rules that World Rugby have, if there's a suspect of a concussion, the player needs to be taken off the field. But in the professional age, it's put in an HIA, which, like he says, is an experiment, but it's putting players in danger.
Yeah.
You know, I've coached with Canada last year. I coached Canada during the AOC, the American Six Nations. As a coach, you watch your players during the game, and you can see when guys get sparked out.
Yeah.
It's obviously not 100%, but if I see a guy get his head on the wrong side of a tackle and he drops to the ground and doesn't move, I'm not going to talk to my physio and say, get him off, get him through the HIA. I'm going to automatically change my player. Because I know that's putting him in danger.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's other cases where it's more difficult to see. But, you know, you go back to the Gillis North incident, the coaches are up above. They're watching the whole field. Mm. They see the guy's laying on the ground. He's not moving. It's probably a good idea to take that player off and change him with somebody else.
Yeah.
I think erring on the side of caution is a pretty good idea. Taking guys off the field and saving them for 60 minutes or 20 minutes of rugby, and, you know, hopefully that's going to help them in the long term.
Mm.
If they lose the game, they lose the game. But I mean, if you start seeing people getting major brain injuries or even death, which is a possibility, then it's gonna really, really screw up the game.
Yeah, you brilliantly, eloquently laid it all out there for people to make up their own minds. Thanks so much for joining us. You won't be shocked to know that literally when we said you were coming on, we instantly got about 100 messages saying, "How does Jamie get on with Paul O'Connell? Does he keep in touch with Paul O'Connell?" Your dust up with Paul O'Connell is one of the favourite Irish sporting moments of the last million years, it seems.
we had a good laugh about that. I was commentating with Paul during the Ireland-Canada game recently in November.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always good to have a catch up with Paul. He's a legend in Ireland. And obviously, I'll say sorry to everyone in Ireland for touching your golden boy.
Do you know what's interesting in his book, which he brought out recently, is so he mentions it. And you might remember he was looking over at the official for some help while you were getting busy. And, it worked out that you get sent off and he gets a yellow. But he was actually saying that Clermont really dominated the second half. And he now regrets not just getting involved straight away with you. He think it put down a physical marker, some kind of unspoken alpha male victory that you had.
I think it's one of those games that maybe if I had stayed on the field, we might have been able to have that first win against Munster a few years earlier.
Yeah.
But I when he looked, I figured, okay, we're going for a card here, so we better both do the same thing. So hopefully we both go 10 minutes for fighting, which is a very, very Canadian attitude as hockey players. You know, two guys fight, two guys go off.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't expecting the red card, and that's the referee's decision.
Again, Jamie Cudmore, thanks so much for coming on and telling your story.
Thank you very much. And if I can just add that our RSN, our Rugby Safety Network, the foundation I've started, my wife, is not for profit, and it's definitely based around educating children in France, because I think it's the best place to start, and there's a real need for young rugby players to be educated so they know the risks and that they're properly protected going into the future.
Great. We'll tweet out a link. What's the email address or what's the website address, Jamie?
We're at RSN, Rugby Safety Network.
.com?
.com, yes. We're on Twitter at RSN. And, look forward to working together with everyone to help them keep rugby as it is, but definitely protect people when they get in a bit of strife.
Good man. Thanks again.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.